Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, brother. Okay. When I'm talking, it seems a bit better, right?
It's yeah. So far we so good. I mean, so
Watch
far
Mike
so
City.
good.
Watch Mike City come
So
mess
we'll see.
everything up.
Mike City.
That's
Okay,
a
so it
lot
seems
better.
like you good.
Mike City in the
It
shower
is Mike
talking.
City. Hold on.
I
It's a
told you
lot.
it's him, bro.
Don't that sound a lot better to everybody?
Yeah, but
Yeah.
you need to leave out the bar you at.
Man,
It's
I'm
bagging.
sitting in the
Oh, Mike City, you want a speaker, ain't you?
I
Mike
think
City
it's
on
Mike
speaker.
City. I think it's Mike City.
Mike City is
You there,
he is
Brian?
insane.
All right,
Yeah,
so
I'm
let me
here,
see.
bro. Can you hear me?
Brian sound way better.
Yeah, so Brian is clear.
I knew it was Mike City the whole time, bro. I didn't want to say nothing. You know what I'm saying?
I'll take
We
myself off
good,
mute.
man. Thank you, bro. You was on speaker. See what I'm
That's
saying?
what
Damn.
it
My goodness gracious. No. All right. So we're gonna get turn right back into it. So Brian. So I thought like the way that you answered that, you said it took you 7 years
Yeah.
for you to get that understanding as to where your mind, it seemed like it kind of just slowed down
Well, you
and
know
you
what?
understood.
Let me
Go
do a
ahead.
recap because it's
Go
probably
ahead.
going to
Yeah, go ahead.
because once it's recorded, it's going to this is going to be like a fresh one.
There you
So
go.
let
Go
me
ahead,
just
bro.
do
Do your
this.
thing.
Let me just do this real quick.
I ain't think of that. That's a good idea, bro.
I wanted to be just like it always is. So we're going to do it like this.
Bang.
So what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Rec Room Podcast, man. I just wanted we had some technical
That's
difficulties,
dope,
so
B.
we kind of starting over, man.
I think you're a professional, ain't he?
And I just wanted to start
Hey,
that music. You know what I mean?
hey, Mike City. Hey,
That's Tom
E.
Brokaw.
That's E
That's
Brokaw. That's E. That's E Brokaw.
So I'm gonna give a little. I'm gonna give a little. A little
Quick recap.
background on what we're talking about. Yeah. So first, I want to say welcome to the Rec Room Podcast. This is episode 74. The
74,
title of
bro.
this pod is called Redemption, and we have a special guest. We have my man Brian Davis, and we have Mike City. And Brian Davis has a story of redemption. We're talking about where he grew up, how he grew up. Brian grew up and Mike City, they grew up in Chicago. And if anybody knows that Chicago, there's a it's you always hear when it comes to the game,
it's
and
a stigma. Yeah,
now,
it's a stigma.
now it's a lot of it's other gangs, but those are the main ones that you hear of. Mike City, I'm sorry, Brian was ended up getting incarcerated. And then we were talking about that. So what I'm going to do is we're going to let you just tell your story again, Brian. So you see, you from the South Side of Chicago. Him and Mike City, they were basically letting us
West
know
Side.
That, you know, it wasn't a
West Side. West Side.
And that it wasn't a choice when you're
We're
that
from West
age
Side.
and how they
We're from
grew
West
up.
Side.
It wasn't really a choice in joining a gang. It's something that was just, that's just what you did, right? You guys
For sure.
saying it was a lifestyle, correct, Brian?
That's right. Absolutely right. You wasn't like there was options as far as if you wanted to be a part of that or not. It was what the streets recommended that you did it.
Okay.
Just like that.
Okay.
It was a norm. It was a norm.
And they jumped off the porch at 14, 13, 14, 15 years old. And
Yeah.
then tell me again about, so we talked about it earlier. I wanted to know what the difference was before the crack era hit when you guys were in the gang opposed to when the crack era hit, Brian.
Yeah, you know, man, I just think that before the crack era hit, for real, man, the game was just, it was sweet. I can't put it in another way. The game was sweet, you know, man. Everybody actually, it felt like everybody really played their position and stayed in their lane. Yeah, you had some small things going on, some small mishaps about it, but you know, going into the crack era, man, that created a whole new monster that a lot of people weren't prepared to deal with because now the enemy ain't just outside in the streets. The enemy laying in your household now.
Wow.
For sure.
You know? So that was the difference between the eras of time of coming from one to the other.
I got you.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to really get into, right? And so Brian actually got incarcerated. How old were you? And then let the people know how many years that you got.
Well, I was 29 years old when I got arrested.
Okay.
They sent me, I had got a 360 months, which is a 30-year sentence from the federal prison.
Now, I didn't know that. I thought that when you got locked up, I thought you were very young. I didn't know you were 29 when that happened.
Yeah, 29. I'm 53 now.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So tell me this: before that, had you ever done any time before that time?
Other than just the county jail time, the hard knocks time, not off into the system, not as well. That's how sweet it was.
So in Chicago, if I get caught with a motherfucker ounce or 2 ounces or something like that, they'll lock me up and I'm out in like 72 hours. I'm out. I'm back on the street. If I get caught with some drugs and a pistol, they lock me up. And when I got locked up outside of Chicago, I didn't realize it was like bondsmen that was involved. Because in Chicago, mm-hmm. if I get locked up and it's not a violent crime, I'm getting an I bond and I'm getting out within 24 hours. I'm back on the street. So when I got locked up in Iowa and they said I needed a bondsman to get me out of jail, that shit was different to me. So now I had to have somebody put up their house, putting up collateral, putting up something physical to get me out of jail. When in Chicago, it wasn't like that. You get caught with guns, you get caught with drugs, you do whatever you're doing, you getting out within 24 to 72 hours. No questions asked.
Yes, because Brian said something that was super key earlier. And when he said when he got outside of his neighborhood, the sentences were way different. The rules were extremely different. Doing the same thing, but where you were doing it at. But if you were in your own neighborhood, to jump on what Danye was saying, you back out, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Brian, so let's I wanna get into, all right. So when you got sentenced, we're gonna go in like order, and I want you to tell kind of your story from when you were told what. Now my question is, were you offered any type of plea deal before you got the 30 years? Was there any, was this a plea, or you took what your charges were? You took it to trial.
Oh yeah, they gonna definitely bring you a plea, because if they don't bring you a plea, then you can beat your case. So the plea is to say that they were fair in dealings with you. They have to bring you a plea agreement, but 9 times out of 10, it's gonna be a plea agreement that's hard for you to swallow, bro.
Okay.
Hard for you to swallow. Now, in my situation, it was me and my family. And I'm just making sure some friends and family ate like as I ate. But that ain't how they look at it. They look at you running an organization. They look at you as dictating, you know, I was convicted with continuing criminal enterprise. So they look at that as you were so multitasking, doing it on a major level, that I was a threat to society.
I got you.
So they took that when you got, you know, a few family members eating with you, and they make you into something. And what they doing while making you into something, they're going to put you away for a long time.
So this is the fucked up situation about it. So if I take the plea deal later on during my sentence, I can get out. But if I fought my case, I can't get out, which is the bullshit. So if I took a plea deal and I did 10 on a 20 at the 12th year, I have the eligibility of getting out of jail. But if I fought my case and I took my case to court and I tried to beat it, they're not going to let me out in 12. I'm going to have to do my whole 23.
Yeah, but let me say this. Let me say this about that. Normally when you take a plea, you're forfeiting your rights. You forfeit your rights for any change in law. Any change in your ability to get out on early release, you forfeit any of that. If you fight your case, you withhold and keep your rights. So anything that happens on Congress that may affect you is going to affect you because you held your rights. So when they have you to take a plea agreement, it's to forfeit anything that may benefit you down the line. They don't want you getting out.
I got you.
Mm.
Well, Brian, tell me this. What was the, what was, when you got your sentence, can you remember what you were thinking when the judge
Great
told
question.
You how many
Great
months
question.
That you had and how long? Take me through your psyche at that very moment, what you thought.
Well, when you go in front of somebody like that, man, that actually have that much power, man, to determine where you go from here, it's tough. You know, so they ask you trickery questions to make sure that you understand what's about to happen to you. Right? They ask you the trickery questions like such as, did anybody promise you anything? Are you on any medications or have you taken any drugs? They ask you all this because they don't want you to say that you was in a sound mind when they hit you in the head they're about to give you. So they ask you, are you all right with the defense of your attorney? Yes, sir. Okay, well, let the court impose and sentence the defendant to 360 months in federal incarceration, and they just run it down. So I'm going to tell you like this, man. In my sentence, I'm going to tell you what hurts more than the judge giving you all that time. Everybody that you fed and looked out for, they went behind you in those seats to support you when you got chopped down like that. That hurts more than what that man do, you know. So my mom was there, and when he gave me 360, brother, the only thing that I could do was drop my head because that's all I could do. I'm belly chained up, ankle chained up, marshals on my left, marshals on my right. You know, they just got me, right? You know, so my mom had told me to lift my head because she didn't, don't let the man see that he broke you. That was the last things that was said in that courtroom. Hold your head up, boy. Don't let that man see he broke you. So my psyche and when I was getting sentenced, man, was heavy. You know, it was heavy. Now, so,
and now let me say this because I don't know if Brian gonna say this, but I'm gonna say it because I went through the similar thing with my mom. So he said his mom was there in the courtroom when he got sentenced to all that time. And she told him to hold his head up. But when his mom passed and he was locked up, he had no access to his mama. You know what I'm saying? So that shit is hard. So you doing a bid and your closest person to you transitions and moved on and you have no access to it. That shit is hard.
So Brian, So they give you your sentence, right? And you have the mindset of, you know, you're trying to stay strong. You know, I can't even imagine something happening like that. And the thing is, you weren't super young when it happened. So now, all right, they give you your sentence and now you go to, and I don't know how it works in Chicago. I know some prisons you stay at one place and you get shipped all over during your years, but we're going to get to that. But before we get to that, once you got in, since you had been doing your thing for such a long time, were there guys where you were that you knew?
When I got to the prison that I was, there was nobody there I knew. But because I was street affiliated, I seen a lot of brothers that I loved because of how I ran it on the streets.
Okay.
So my bloodline, my ties to what I was about, was in prison as well. So I came in representing what that is and they embraced me. So those people in there became my family. You know, so if the structure I knew, it was still going on even in there, but it was just more intensified because we try to avoid popping off shit in there.
Now this is the federal system, correct?
Yes, sir.
And so when I look at, you know, documentaries or things like that, I see that it seems like it's segregated to where it's like Aryan brothers,
Mexican,
the whole thing. Was it like that in prison?
Oh yeah, it was like that, man. You know, it's everybody against the brother, man. Everybody. It was us against the Mexicans, the natives, the white boys. Man, name it. The Dominicans, the Puerto Ricans, name it, man.
Now, was it separated where, okay, we from Chicago, they from D.C., they from here. Was it like that or was it more of like, how was the separation in terms of the blacks?
No, see, the blacks, we represented our city. So you had coalitions. You had the D.C. car, the D.C. Baltimore car, the D.C. car. You had the Cleveland, Ohio. You had the Chicago, Michigan, Indiana. So we all was segregated when on our own understanding. But then when it's time for us to emerge and come together, we did that.
Now, was there a lot of violence? Did you see a lot of violence in your stint?
Most definitely.
Okay. Now, with that violence, did you ever feel like, so I had a friend, one of my friends, he only had to do a little bit of time, but for some reason, he wasn't liked, and they shipped him to a federal prison. So even though he had like 2-3 years, they put him in a federal prison, and he got out. And when he got out, he came to my house one day, and he was just explaining to me the way, you know, the stuff that he saw. And when he was explaining it to me, the look on his face, like, he wasn't looking at me when he was talking. He was, like, just staring off. Mm. And he was like, it was a situation where he didn't even want to get mistaken for somebody. And he was just saying how vicious it was. And he ended up going back. But the way he was talking was like how he never would go back. But the way he was describing what he saw take place, I could see his mind was like in a whole nother realm. And he was just talking about seeing people get stabbed. He was talking about mistaken identity. And just the look on his face just made it crucial. Was it anything that shell-shocked you? Like, were you prepared for everything you saw? Or was there a particular incident that just threw you? You know what I mean?
Well, man, when I came in, man, like I say, I came in and my mind was closed, right?
Okay.
So the first thing you want to accomplish or put out there, man, you ain't no whole ass dude, man.
Okay.
That's the first thing. So you establish, so guys going to look at you, and then, you know, it's going to be guys that you roll with that don't even like you.
Mm.
So you can't get away from it. But what you try to do is, you know, you just try to prep yourself for an everyday struggle. Because it's worse than the streets in there, man.
You know, wow.
Everybody is in real close proximity, you know. And the safest time was when they locked them gates on you, locked them cell doors. That's when you sleep like a baby, man. That was it, you know. And they unlocked them doors at 5:30 in the morning. It's back to intensified environment all day, every day, man. Somebody got a story to tell. Somebody want to see somebody bleeding. So somebody is in that situation to make a situation even worse. Regardless of how you think, how bad your situation is, it's somebody looking at you that want to make your situation even worse.
Now, did you ever get into a physical altercation while you were incarcerated?
I loved them, man. I stayed in them.
Oh, shit.
So, how about this? Give me, now you seem real laid back.
Hey, but, you were the president to say that shit.
Don't tell me this, man.
So, my bad, man. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Brad, so give me an example of a time where what made, like, you can think about one in particular, and what made you get into that physical altercation. Can you give me one?
Yeah, man. My cousin that was locked up with me, rest in peace, Sconey. You know, he used to always come out on the yard with me, and he'd be like, "Cuz, you play too many. Play basketball too much." I'm like, "Cuz, if I don't get myself no therapeutic exercise, I'm gonna kill something."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the basketball, when you hear about prison basketball, it's prison. Mm-hmm. You know, it's physical.
Yeah.
You know, so you guys would call you all out your name, and you'd be like, "Hey, man, listen, let's just play. We can play if we're playing, but let's just keep it respectful. Though. Don't do that. Oh, what?" And it get to other places. So at the same time, dudes is measuring you.
Absolutely.
Man, I ain't trying to watch no nigga draws. You heard me?
Yeah.
So when it comes down to a certain understanding, and I ain't finna be lame where everybody think it's sweet. So you have to do what it is. So, man, I've been to 9 different prisons behind a lot of altercations.
Okay.
So basically when you get into an altercation, what they do is send you to another prison because you're what labeled a troublemaker at that point.
Absolutely.
Automatically? Okay.
You're getting out of
it. Automatically. That. Okay.
And it really depends on how the violence went down. Okay. You know, if the violence go down, they like, "Listen, you ain't getting back," because they don't want you to kill nobody.
So
they send you somewhere else. Now, just fist fights, they not really too much bothered with that. But weapons,
the knife,
things of that nature, you getting up out of there.
Okay.
So you have to always have it.
And that's why when I was locked up, I played chess.
You played chess like Kitty.
I played chess. I was locked up in Leesburg, Virginia. I was locked up in Leesburg. So I used to hang out with this old cat. His name was Silk. This nigga was like 60. I played chess with this nigga every day. Like, I played chess with these niggas. But this nigga from Richmond tried to come up and confront me and do some old bogus shit. And I had to stand my ground. And, yo, when you in a situation where ain't nobody got your back and it's just you, it's like you in a microcosm of some shit that you can't believe. So I get what he's saying. I understand totally what he's saying.
So Brian,
yeah,
would you describe yourself as when you were in prison, would you describe yourself as a hothead?
For sure, man. Yes, you know, at that point when you coming in like that, man, when you around a lot of savages, you gotta become a savage.
True. You gotta become it.
You got to become a savage, right? Because I thought that was, and I want you to hear me now. I really thought that was all what was in there until I learned how to change my thought pattern and exercise that type of thoughts. Then I started seeing, and I use this term the way I do because I know God is real. So I started seeing angels, good brothers, you know, who put something more in you than just doing your time. Because, you know, this was the old cliche where they say, man, you got to learn how to do your time and stop making your time do you.
Okay. So
when you start understanding what that concept really means, you start developing a mental and a spiritual understanding. So you start leaving the games alone.
So Brian.
How long were you locked up before you start, where you say you start meeting the right people? How long did that take? How long were you locked up before that?
I was in a savage mentality for 7 years.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So Brian, so you said when you saw the angel, see this the shit that I like, bro. So what were they saying to you to make your brain shift? And then once you started to shift, how did you maintain that you still weren't going to be a victim, but your thoughts were different now? How did you transition?
Well, I transitioned because I started being open-minded to what some of the guys would say to me. At first, I used to take it in a kind of way as I thought they were being disrespectful. I knew one thing, and that was the streets. That was the gang affiliated with the streets. So my understanding was me and mine. It was just one nation or nothing, you know. So, but when you start getting into things like this brother, you know, his name remained anonymous. He used to always ask me, man, you seen God today where you didn't see him yesterday? Like, what are you talking about, man? Come on. I was just so hot and mental about those kind of questions. It irritated me. You know what I mean? Like, go on with that BS, man. I ain't trying to hear that. Go on with the, you know, and I'm ready to send it up. But you have to think about, you have to reflect on those kind of things. So I would ask him, man, when you ask me that, what do you be saying? What do you be meaning when you ask me, did I see God today why I didn't see him yesterday? So he would tell me, like, man, listen, man, God with you every day. The more you start seeing God in your walk, the more you will start allowing yourself to change. But if you don't see God in the places that you are, you will never change. You will stay that remaining person who you are until you're old fool. So I started seeing that purpose and start moving differently. And he would give me homework to do, and I would accept it.
Now, while you were going through this, now you know how life is, right?
Yeah.
And when you're trying to do better, there always seems like there's something to try to take you from that. Or deter you from that. When you're trying to go to God, right?
Yeah.
It's like the devil is like, oh, for real? That's what we're doing? Well, I got something for that. So on your journey to when you were actually turning when you were turning to the positive and listening, did you get, were there any challenges within that?
That's an everyday struggle. You know, that just don't change because what somebody or what you think you are. You have to know how to subdue one and then use the other for his purpose. And when you understand and really what that means, you will really take care of both balances in your life. That's what you have to do. It's going to be things that's going to entice you, be things that you know you shouldn't probably be a part of, but it's just about exactly how you do things, how you go about things. You know, it ain't what you do, it's how you do. So instead of being all in on something, get in just to help pull somebody out like they did me.
Wow.
Now, when you were getting pulled out, was there a situation where they like, oh, Brian changed, man. He right. Over there with them now. You know what? Did you go through any of that?
You know what's funny about that? A whole lot of them came with me.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
And I didn't realize, you know, how much of an impact I had on people too.
Wow.
Yeah. So from that, I got elected as being the spiritual father figure of the temple, of the Moore Science Temple of America, the Grand Sheikh. So I was able to, you know, and give them brother portions of understanding. And they all came, the majority of them came with me.
And you said you went to 9 different prisons. So which prison was this? Was this one where you stayed at for a while, where you was able to make this shift?
I stayed there 8 years. That was the longest I ever been in any prison.
Okay. Wow. And what part of the world was this?
That was in Ohio, Elkton, Ohio.
Okay.
So then from there, since, you know, I walked my walk, I started, my prison level started going down.
I got you.
So okay. I had promised myself and those brothers that I would never leave out of a back door of a prison again, that I would always leave out on my own 2 feet.
Mm.
And that's how I made it home.
And how much time did you actually do out of the 30 years?
23 years, 10 months.
23 years, 10 months. Now, let me ask you this. While you're in prison, were you what was, so you know, the world changes from when you For went sure. in to now. Mm-hmm. And how much of that, like, were you guys able to get your hands on iPhones and just were you able to keep up with technology?
Great question.
Or was a thing where it's like you all probably could see TV, but you still felt left behind. Which one?
Well, we could see TV, but we still was left behind. You know, cell phones were available, but as the higher the security go, the more they cost. The lesser your security level was, like at a camp or something, it might cost you $200. But at a medium, at a pen, it might cost you $6,000.
Wow, $6,000?
$6,000.
6,000.
Oh shit!
So I
want to get the iPhone. You want to call her? 6,000.
So, you know, so this technology world, man, is new to me. You know, my girl helped me navigate through a lot of it, and I just have to, you know, be patient about soaking all of it up and getting involved with the technology world because it is what it is now. You know, and just coming out, man, and seeing these young guys out here, man, and wearing their fingernails and these, you know, I'm like, whoa, the world has really changed. You know what I mean? It's changing in there as well. Just like it's changing out here, it's changing. It's changing in there like that too. And, you know, and some of your guys that are punching a hole in a concrete car, in a concrete wall, he punching a hole in something else if you catch him a drill. You know what I mean? So guys ain't the guys no more. So that broke up a lot of things, and people look at, you know, so it's just, everything is just crazy. But
now I heard you mention, just now you mentioned your girl. And so when you were incarcerated, were you able to maintain relationships? Did people write you? Were people there for you?
Well, let me tell you this story, right? It's hard to maintain relationships because out of sight, out of mind, people really play you like that. You know, they don't answer your phone call because they figure you're calling in need. They ain't got nothing for you, so they don't want to deal with you. So it was this beautiful woman that I remember seeing a lot before I got locked up, right? And I would inquire about her, and I had lost contact about her, but I got in tune with a friend, and he knew her. And when I talked to him, he plugged me up with her, and she'd been down with me since that day all the way up to this day.
Damn. Are you serious? That's dope.
Wow. So that's what, 20? Oh, so that was what, like 20 years, or this was toward the end of your...
This was towards the end. Okay. I would say about a good solid 5 years. you know. Wow. And I had told her that on the norm, you know, for something like that, nothing really go past 6 months. And being
okay,
you know, so 6 months it get washed off. You know, people move on. You just something to do to pass the time.
Yeah. Right.
And she put a fork and put a flag into this soil, man, and it's been like that really since that time or period, man. It is what it is now.
That's a blessing, man, because I know that a lot of people come out to, you know, and now that you say that, I have one of my friends is doing like 20 years.
Yeah.
I think for like it was like a double homicide. And I had lost touch with him for actually his whole time that he was locked up, but he would always come to my mind. But I didn't have a way to get in touch with him. It just was odd because no matter what, all through the years, he would just I don't just stay in my spirit. And okay. when he was out, we were friends, but it wasn't like he was my best friend. But he just was a person who he had a great heart, but just didn't have the best upbringing. So, right. But he had a good heart, but you know, had a bad temper and just not the best upbringing. But a good hearted guy. And he was in my spirit, and I end up getting in contact with him through somebody else. And through that, you know, he would call me and he would be like, you know, at first he would call and I'd be like, man, I got in touch with you because I know I just wanted to be able to give him some money. So I would give him money whenever I had it. He would hit me and I would give him money, send him pictures. And he would just be like, he'd call me and he'd be like, man, I hate, he said, I know you probably, I'm calling you and you probably feel like I'm only calling you when I need something. Yeah. And I was like, man, you do need something. So I don't expect, you know, like I'm not viewing it that way. You know what I'm saying? I understand your situation. You don't have to stay on the phone with me the whole time you call all your minutes and stuff. Let me know what you need and I got you. You know what I mean? Like it's okay. And I'm sure that he's probably on his 15th, 16th year. Mm-hmm. And a couple times he called me, and you know, sometimes when you call from prison, the numbers, it's like you don't know the phone number. So I don't usually answer phone numbers that I don't know. So it's a couple times where he may have called and I didn't get the phone call. And he doesn't call anymore. And it's probably because he probably thinks that either I didn't pick up the phone on purpose or he just doesn't want to be a burden on me. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying all this to say is that when you were locked up, did you feel like that you didn't want to call people because you felt like a burden, or every time that you were able to reach out to somebody, you reached out?
Man, you know, that's a real, that question right there, man, is so 100.
That's a goddamn good ass fucking question boy.
That's so real, man. That's why, you know, your guys to the end of the world. We talking about Mike Fitty, you know what I mean? My man, I mean, listen, man, he's been there for me, man, through it all, bro. You know what I mean? And my queen on the other hand, and just having that, a real good friend, a true friend, and then I got my queen on the other end, man, it came to me in time, but I'm just glad that I was able to unfold in that place on a positive level and to receive Danye and my queen. You know what I mean? Because when you call people, man, sometimes you get so caught up in it because on how people behave, you just cut the world off and you stay within the fence.
Yeah.
You stay within the fence because you have to understand what you battling. You know what I mean? So when you reach out to people, it's got to be people that you confide in. You know what I mean? And I got my mans and I got my baby.
So when B reached out to me and I realized what his number was, I locked the motherfucking BOP, Bureau of Prisons, in my phone. So every time he called, I knew who was calling me. You know what I'm saying? So I would never reject a call because I know what it feels like to try to reach out to somebody and they don't respond on the other end. That shit. And when you're in a situation where you don't have no control over your everyday shit, that shit is deep. So I already knew when, like, if this nigga reached out to me, whether we was talking about the Bulls, the Bears, you know what I'm saying, sports.
That part.
You know what I'm saying, local shit. Like, I wanted to make sure that he was up on whatever was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real, though. That's real. I always hear a lot of people don't don't do that. And I see how it's like, you know, out of sight, out of mind. It's yeah. almost, and it can almost be like, it's not an excuse, but it's almost like a human nature thing, because, you know, and when you're living your life, you're living your life. And even mm-hmm. when you have friends that are not locked up, you don't talk to them. So just yeah. imagine that's somebody true, true. That, you know what I mean, that is incarcerated. Yeah. But Brian, I wanted to ask you, so were you given a release date? Like, was there a light at the end of the tunnel?
No, not in the beginning. It wasn't in the beginning. I mean, who can actually see, you know, when I got my sentence, it was 2002.
Okay.
So my out date was 2028. You can't see that. I couldn't see that. So going in there, you're dealing with a lot of weakness, miseries. You know, you're dealing with, you know, a lot of things about yourself that you just don't want to deal with. And in the meantime, you losing loved ones. So the battle was like, man, the devil was big on your back, man. So you don't see that tunnel, but you got to remove the devil. You got to remove all the negative things and turn what means more to you in life and turn it to a great positive. You know, so it's time to try to refocus yourself all the way back down, and then you can start seeing some light. But you can't see no light if you ain't got your third eye open for that.
True. Mm. And also where they talk about when you are incarcerated, how, like, you just touched on, there's something that is so powerful, Brian, is the mental health part of it.
For sure.
Right? On how, like you said, you could not see it. Some guys get in there and they break.
Absolutely.
Right? So would you say that what helped you? What helped you to keep to keep going mentally, and what separates those guys?
Man, I think, you know, in my opinion, brother, what helps me get through, man, is you have to reach in and find the true essence of yourself. You know, if you care enough about yourself to make it through what you're going through, you're gonna shift gears about a lot of things and get on the right track. You know, and then the ones that just wasn't strong enough, you know, to make it through, you're going to have some like that. You know, those are the examples of why I need to keep pushing. So everybody and everything serves a purpose. You know, so you have to be in tune with what's going on around you to understand why certain things ain't happy. You know, everybody ain't built to make it. Mm. You know, so I just look at it that I pray that everybody do, but at the same time, you pull up who you can and who you can't. You just got to keep it moving, man.
And now
that's like war. That's like going into battle. That's like you going to Desert Storm and you got a platoon of motherfuckers and. Some people can't make it. You gotta leave them behind. That's tough.
Now, Brian, I was gonna ask, when guys, let's say you're incarcerated, and then you have some of your partners, or they might not be your partners, but just people you know of, they get a release date. Did you notice when guys got a release date, was a lot of the guys happy for the person, or was there a lot of jealousy and envy when a person got a release date?
It's a combination of both. You know, you would see guys, you know, let's say you got the guys that's doing all the stealing in here. They keep up all the chaos. You know, they got the good guys, they had shipped out. A lot of people ain't happy about their date. They really want their ass to be just get out the way, you know. Mm-hmm. And then couple years later, you hear back in prison about somebody that blew his head off, you know, because you can tell the menace of people. So sometimes they say prison save people if people really understand.
Wow, that's big right there, bro. Yeah, what you just said. People.
So when they in there, the opportunity to do that, they just don't do. They think the way they came in. They're going to slide back out with it, and it catches up. But it's some guys in there, man, that deserve to be out here that's still in there. And then there's some guys that got their date, they earned them, like myself, who's out here that trying to make the best of them. But now the world has changed so much, the adapt to it, you know, is kind of difficult, and it gets overwhelming sometimes, but it is what it is. But, you know, you got guys that root for other guys, and you got some guys that don't root for guys. You know, it don't change.
Now, when did you get released?
I got released February 13th of 2023.
Okay. Okay. Wow. That was just.
I mean, my fault. February 24. My bad. It ain't been a year. 24. So I just got out 2 months ago.
Really?
Hey. Yep. Wow. So Brian, we got a question from one of our members, Miss Donnie, the first lady of the rec room. She said, outside of learning new technologies, what difficulties have you had struggled with or encountered getting acclimated back into society, back into the world?
Man, the financial way of doing things.
Okay.
The credit card play. I mean,
okay.
We were out somewhere. My girl was like, "Here, what, put it on." I'm like, "I was locked, man. Look,
right?
You know, I'm like, what I supposed to do with this? You know, how do I do this? You know, just okay. Tapping on it. Tapping on what? I don't understand what I'm tapping. You know, just show me a few times. I'm used. Right. I've always been the kind of guy that dealt with the cash. You know, okay. So the credit card thing was something different for me. You know, but for the most part, and finding employment online and things of that nature, that's kind of difficult for me. You know,
okay.
I used to put my social security number on a lot of stuff that I used to file my girl, like, don't do that. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
So all that is just different for me. What now I got to get acclimated to, you know, theft and identity theft and watch out and protect that. So all that's new to me. You know what I mean?
So are there programs that set up, like, you know, for people to transition, or is it just, okay, cool, we're releasing you and that's it? Like, is it any type of programs to help people coming back into society, or is it just you and you out?
Yeah. Well, they had, I was in a program that helped me get out 3 years early.
Okay. Okay.
So they do have RDAP programs, you know, which mm-hmm. I'm taking to help get me out 3 years early, you know, due to the year halfway house. They take a year off your sentence, and they gave me 18 months home confinement. So I supposed to be there to 28. So everything worked out. Then my FSA. So the government started doing things, and people started programming and getting time off their sentence. So they started adjusting the sentence every month. So that's how I got everything due to the First Step Act, how things was happening. But they don't really introduce
First Step
you. If you was to get caught with a cell phone in there, it's actually like getting caught with an AR-15.
What?
Yeah, that's how they handle that in there. It's like the bells and sirens goes off if they catch you with it, because they fear that you have a device to have whatever you want done to a staff or an officer.
Okay.
So they totally against. So if they don't introduce you to technology at all, other than, you know, the computer system. We got the email, but it's all old fashioned. So when I come out and I see a laptop now, it's not the same as in the inside. Not by not close at all.
Now I see where they say in prison, a lot of is people are very respectful in prison, because stepping on somebody's shoe, bumping into somebody. I just hear that everybody's mannerable. Excuse me. You know, all those type of things, right?
Yeah.
And would you say that that's true?
Well, it gets, when you're on the higher levels, you ain't got to worry about nothing like that. You know, if you bump into a guy's chair and you try to put his chair back, he going to act up, the guy that owned that chair, because he's very territorial, because that's all he got.
Mm.
Is that small space. So yeah, he willing to go to hell or kill you for it, because it's all that he can say belong to him. But when you get down to the lower levels, people start running over each other. So the respect goes out the lower you get. So the understanding is like withering away, because everybody really trying to go home. So ain't no time for drama. So guys run over each other, and it be, oh, excuse me, sometimes, and sometimes they just don't. But you have to adjust to the ignorance again.
Yeah. So let me ask this. Is the street life, is street life worse than prison life?
The only thing that's worse is they got guns on the street. But in prison, everybody know what you just did. Everybody. You understand? On the streets, you got to find out who done something. In there, they know who done it. So whether you did it with approval or not, it's difficult for me. And then on the other levels, if you was to be sent from a prison for security reasons because they know what you've done, there's going to be what we call kites behind you to follow you to the next prison. Mm. So you ain't got a way. Prison is a community. It's like the streets. You can contact people and notify people about who on the way or what somebody done. He can't survive. So it's the same. The only play is ain't no guns.
Wow. So well, I didn't realize that you got out so just recently like that, man.
Yes, sir.
Now let's talk about the food, right?
Man.
and so what was your first meal when you did get out?
The first meal I got out was Italian beef, man.
Italian beef. Chicago style. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Dip, you know, a large Pepsi. Oh, my goodness. Man, I went down through it.
Hey, Donye made that for me, Brian. I love that shit. I love that shit, bro. We're going to get E turned on to it, bro. Watch.
Yeah,
we're going to turn E on to it.
Yeah, because I don't know what y'all talk about.
this shit good, bro. Don't worry about it. We got
Chicago
you.
Food is so good. Yo, Chicago is like a different world outside of. So I've been in a lot of places. So when I left Chicago, so my transition from Chicago, I left Chicago. I went to Waterloo, Iowa. When I left Waterloo, Iowa, I went to Gary, Indiana. I was in Gary, Indiana, and I was still so close to Chicago. I was like, yo, I'm back in the city within 30 minutes, so I'm still in the same shit. So when I made my transition, when I moved to Atlanta, and I didn't know nobody in Atlanta, and Brian reached out to me when he was doing this thing in Indiana. He was like, yo, my guy, I'm doing my thing. Come down to Indiana. I'm getting money down here. I'm like, okay, I'm going to come. So when I was thinking about coming to Indiana, which I was going to come because that was my nature of getting money. So I was like, yo, you getting money, I'm going to come down to Indiana. So I said, yo, B. B said, he said, what you need? I was like, yo, give me a stack. This nigga drove down to Atlanta and he dropped me off three stacks in 1996. So three stacks in 1996 from somebody that's hustling from Chicago, that's some great shit. Yeah. So I'm like, yo, I'm going to come down there. So when I called him, he didn't answer his phone. So I'm calling him, and this nigga ain't answering his phone. So once I found out that he got knocked.
Oh, that's when it happened?
Yeah, that's when it happened. So when I found out that he got knocked and he was facing charges doing 23, I could have been right there with him. Because Pimp told me, yo, B told me, he was like, yo, I was at my discovery in court. I heard conversations on the phone and wiretaps and using the wiretaps. Like, I could have been right there. So that shit just kind of like changed my life. So I just had to figure out how to maneuver and how to do things differently than what I was doing. Because I could have been doing 23 right there with him.
Well, Easy. Mike City, let me ask you, because You all seem like you all held each other down. And what made when Brian got his time, you know, what made you, because loyalty is far few and in between, and having a real friend is far few and in between, right? And so what made you stay in touch with him? What made you hold him down while he was locked up? What was it?
So when he first got locked down, I didn't know. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know what kind of time he was doing. And I took a trip back to Chicago and I was talking to a mutual friend of ours and he gave me his information. I said, yo, if B call you, give him my information. Once he gave him my information, we stayed on lock like every day since then. Like once we had our information and we can contact each other, it was on. Like that's... Like, I'm not going to leave nobody behind. Like, if... Yo, Trey. No. Look, Trey.
Yeah.
If it was me and y'all, like, the bond that we have, like, my loyalty level, I'm not going to let y'all fall by the wayside. That's just what it is.
Yeah. That part.
No, that's real talk.
That part.
Now, Brian, what would be... So, what is your overall message to the youth. First, I'm gonna ask your. So this is what I this is for. So two things. The first message that let's do. We're gonna get to the real positive part. The positive message next. But first, the first thing is I want to ask you, for anybody who is doing time, how would you tell a person to carry themselves if they're incarcerated?
Oh, man, that's a good question, man.
Good question, bro.
Tom Brokaw.
I would you know, advise any of the younger, the older brothers, you know, the ones in between, man, find your lane, man. You know, quit following up behind brothers. You know what I'm saying? Do it for yourself, man. Add something to yourself, man. When they offering you some of the programs, you probably say, man, I ain't taking that BS. The hell with being locked up, etc. Whatever it is, it's a tool for you, man. Take advantage of all tools and put them on your belt and become a master of yourself. Become a master of whatever you want to be and quit being a master of foolishness. You know what I mean? So I would just let them know, man, just always go at what you want full throttle, man. You know, that would be it.
And that's for carrying it in prison. Now, the second question to that is, what advice would you give for a person to avoid prison? You know, like, okay, you know, like, all right, like you were telling me at the beginning, you were saying that you guys didn't have a choice. It wasn't a thing where it's like, hey, you know what? I want to be in the street today. It wasn't like that. It was there, and that's what you all did. So that could be the case for people now. I mean, I'm sure it is. Yeah. But if that is the case, what advice do you give to a person that is in the street right now?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure they still using the same thing. It's what we would say, excuses only benefit those who make them, you know. And you see your own way because it's an excuse for you to go your way, you know. So I would just say, man, before you actually think that there is no other way, no other option, it's always an option for you, man. Don't let nobody tell you nothing different, man. You know.
So let me piggyback off that. So when me and B was in the streets, like I got around some other people that was introducing me to the Moorish American. Like as black people in America, like we don't have a nationality, like. Caucasians, they come from Europe, they come from Ireland, they come from Sweden. Asians come from Japan and Taiwan and stuff like that. Black people don't have their nationality. So when I was in Chicago and I got hooked up with some brothers that was teaching me the Moorish science of where we come from, and I exposed that on Brian, like, at that time, like, we knew what it was because it was laws that we draw off of because of our gang affiliation, but we didn't know the extent to it. So when he went down and got incarcerated and he got really involved into the Moore science and he saw where it's coming from, he's like, yo, I know that you try to, you know, bestow that on me and show me the way. Now I understand it. It was like, it was a whole totally different light.
No, real talk. Yeah. And Brian, is your faith as part of what carried you through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In my lessons, it says, for a man to unfold, God and man must unfold. So you can't see God until you start unfolding to your consciousness. You can think so, but until you unfold, you really can't get into that essence. You have to get there. But I mean, how can you really cleanse yourself? So these youngsters, you know, that I would say, man, you know, the beginning of cleansing your understanding, man, is to change how you move. You man saying your thinking is your power. You have to exercise your thoughts, man. Exercise them and believe in yourself even when others don't. So because we lack confidence and our doubts are always what we bring on ourselves, it's easy for somebody to tear you down because you don't even believe in yourself about anything that you choose to do. So my advice to them youngsters out there, man, put your best foot forward like you're trying to do to destroy, do the same thing to build. Just change the concept.
And Brian, I just want to thank you, man, for
absolutely, bro.
For coming on the pod because you have a positive testimony, man. And I didn't even realize that you had just, you know, got out like that, man. And you just you have a story where you where you've turned and not only have turned, but you're still continuing to turn your life around, man. And I just think that's great.
Absolutely.
And I'll say this also, a lot of times, you know, people don't always want to hear from people who haven't been through anything.
Yeah.
Right.
And or haven't been through it. It would be hard for me to tell somebody about prison if I'd never been. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so that means that you have you're special and you have a calling on your life where you can speak positivity into somebody and they'll actually listen because you're somebody
Absolutely.
Who went through it, man.
Because you've been through it.
Okay, that's love. And I appreciate you guys and the opportunity, man, to tell my story.
Absolutely. But when you thrown into a situation and you have no choice and your choices are limited, it's crazy.
Yes, sir.
It's crazy, King.
Straight for Lando. Tell him hey. Who in the building.
Hey. Listen to this. We still got a packed house. What's it on a Monday night?
Ooh, on a Monday
okay.
night.
Stop. Hey, yo, B.
What up, yo, yay? B. What up?
Yeah. Who we drafting?
Oh, you want to talk about nobody hey! Cares about those Chicago Bears, man. Yes,
hold on. Hey, B, who we drafting?
Man, we gonna go Big Caleb, man.
We gonna go Big Caleb, E. Big Caleb.
Big
that's
butt.
The name of the. That's the name of the podcast tonight, E. Big Caleb. Hey, so look, we got the Queen, Miss Talisha, in the studio. Thank you so much, Queen, for being in the studio with us tonight. We have Miss Cheryl Gapoos in the studio with us tonight. We have. The Queen, Miss Van Robb, she in here with us every single week. We have DFC in here with us tonight. We have Miss Lori. We got another member, our brother Tyreek Kilgore, in here with us tonight. What's up, Reek? Appreciate you, brother. We know this was short notice. Who else we got in here? We got ADMF. What's up, ADMF? We appreciate you. We got Francis in here with us tonight. We have NADN. How you doing, NADN? I appreciate you for being here with us tonight. And that's who we got up in here with us tonight. And of course, we had the first lady, Miss Donnie. She's been in here since we started the show.
For sure.
Okay. Hey, so Trey, you know what that means? So that means every Thursday, Brian gonna probably chime into the show so he can give his perspective.
Of course, he got to get into the chat. Well, he got to get into the chat. Just jump on that.
Welcome anytime, bro. Man, you know
anytime,
you catch the pod on any streaming platforms, Google Pod, Amazon, Spotify,
YouTube,
you name it. That's where we are. Follow us on Instagram. At the Rec Room Pod, subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Rec Room Pod. When you go to our YouTube
Absolutely.
Channel, well, first you follow us on Instagram. Once you follow us on Instagram, what you want to do is click on that link. When you click on the link, it'll take you to the YouTube channel. You subscribe to that. We have in-person episodes, on-camera episodes. So we do the Podbean every Thursday at 8 p.m. And we also do the in-person ones on certain Sundays. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the pod. And as I always say, everybody has a pod, but everybody is in us. To the next time.
Bang. We up out of here. Peace. Yeah.